Hello there and welcome along to this week's The Front Page. I'm your host Maddie Plale for today's show and I'm joined by Racing Reporter of the Year Jonathan Harding and Deputy Irish Editor David Jennings is on the line as well to discuss the three major stories from the past week. Of course, it's just been Irish Derby weekend at the Curragh, which is always a key topic of discussion. Have there been murmurs of improvement or is the Curragh's investment just dwindling on the racing population in Ireland? We also have the news that the four-time champion jockey Oisin Murphy has been charged with drink driving and refusing to cooperate with police and provide a roadside sample. He is due to appear in court this week. And also the sad news of the passing of legendary trainer Barry Hills. He founded a racing dynasty. His legacy will carry on, but more on his loss later in the show. First up then is the Irish Derby, and it was a double for Lambourne in the Classic after his somewhat surprising win at Epsom. It always looked for likely results at the Curragh DJ, prominently placed by Ryan Moore. There were plenty of opposition, but I felt this was a job well done, a tick in the box for Lambourne. He's never going to look particularly flashy. What did you make of the performance?
Yeah, he was grand. I think grand is probably the right word to describe it because grand covers everything in Ireland. If you're grand, you're either really good, really bad, or somewhere in the middle. So grand covers everything. I would say he was grand. He was tough, and I think he's the type of horse. He's obviously surprised people. I don't think he was towards the top of the pecking order in the Ballydoyle Classic Brigade at the start of the season, but he's propelled himself to the top of that, and it was kind of like at Epsom, it was all effortless. He got to the front, never looked like being beaten, nothing got into the race and nothing happened, whereas at the Curragh it was like, okay, so he didn't really get his own way in front. He was asked a few more questions, and I actually went down for the purposes of the race. I said, do you know what, I'm going to go down to the kind of the furlong pole and watch it on the rails and just look back at the stand basically to see the how big of a crowd there was in the stand, which we'll come to in a minute. There was actually a pretty decent crowd. But when he was passing me with Serious Contender, I was like, oh God, this could be a bit of a shock. And I was actually about to puke because I fancied Serious Contender at Royal Ascot. And I was like, how the hell did he not win that off 92? He wasn't doing a stroke in front. Like, he was just, even watch him crossing the line, he's just playing around. So I'd say he was probably value for more than the winning margin. Is he the best Irish Derby winner of all time? Absolutely not. Is he the worst? Absolutely not. He probably fits somewhere in the middle. He'd be an absolute good thing in the ledger, but I don't think they're going to go that direction and they're going to try and make him into a really good horse. Whether he is a really, really good horse, I don't know. Will he win an R? I doubt it.
Yeah, I must admit, Jonathan, when they came out and said it's the King George and the Arca races we're looking at, he didn't appeal much to me for either of those. I know it's his style and he's never going to look flashy, but I think he'd be vulnerable in a race like that. I'd fancy him more for sort of the 2 mile cup races next year. What say you?
Yeah, I could see him. I could see him going further, definitely, because he has that ability to travel very comfortably at whatever pace you ask him to travel at. He's quite machine-like. It was interesting listening to Aidan O'Brien after saying, if you ask him to be in first gear, he'll stay in first gear. If you ask him in third, he'll stay in third. He has that battling quality that seems to define those Aidan O'Brien horses at the moment. When I think about a lot of them, it's that completely genuine, tries his best. He's not going to blow your socks off, but he's very talented nonetheless. Don't confuse that. He's clearly a very good horse. We will see just how good he is if he does try and take on some of those really classy types in a King George or an Arc. But I can see the argument for actually trying him over a little further.
Maybe we're dismissing him. Let us know in the comments, what do you think of Lambourne and would you fancy him for one of those big mile and a half targets at the end of this year? DJ, one of the main talking points, I guess, more so than the race, was the atmosphere at the Curragh and the attendance. Our Irish editor, Richie Forrestall, is not a fan of the Curragh, safe to say, and wrote a column beforehand last week talking about how they've sort of sacrificed the quality of the racing to give quantity and appease the whirlpool, which is of course very important. But he's not happy with the state of affairs at the Curragh and what Brian Kavanagh's done. There were murmurings of positivity though. Attendance is up and the whirlpool was very healthy as well. What did you make of the action on track? What did you make of the sort of the crowds and the atmosphere given you were there?
Yeah, first things first, I thought there was a real good buzz there, and I would say I'm somewhere in the middle. I don't absolutely adore the curragh, but I don't hate it at all, and I think it does probably get more negative press than it deserves. It is actually a decent place to go racing, and yesterday the buzz surprised me because I was kind of thinking six handicaps, no group races. How is this going to go down, apart from the Derby, of course? How is this going to go down? And I feared the worst. And even when I was driving in, I was there, unlike me, I was actually on time. I was there maybe an hour and a bit before the first race, and there was no traffic. And I was going, oh, this is going to be a disaster of epic proportions. And then I got in, and when you got in, there was music playing, and there was a buzz. And I was like, oh, my God, there's actually loads of people here. And actually, when I watched the Derby, as I said, when I look back at the stand, I seen the damn, it's as full as I've seen that stand for any race. And I watched a good few of the races actually in the stand, and it was like three quarters full, which is very, very seldom for that stand. Like, I've often watched races almost on my own in that stand. So I would say a great buzz. I was expecting the crowd to be more. So I think the official crowd was somewhere around 11,200. Now, there's a bit of a confusion around this crowd. Because...
Yeah, tell us about this. What's this adjusted attendance mean?
Yeah, I don't know. You tell me. So basically, I think it was officially said on the day last year that it was 11,418. And this was put to Brian Kavanagh, and he said, no, Brian was actually, I think if memory serves me correctly, I don't think Brian was there last year. I think he might have been sick. I'm not 100% sure on that. But I think he said, so basically the crowd was adjusted, whatever that means, and the actual crowd was 10,300. So I don't know. I don't know how attendances work. I thought it was just how many people come through the gates is your attendance, and it's ABC stuff. It's obviously not.
Is it not? I mean, should a race course, the stature and the reputation of the curragh, not be getting something like that, you know, straightforward, spot on?
I don't know. Maybe there's more to attendances than I know. I honestly don't know. So he's saying that 10,300 last year, 11,200 this year. So the 11,200, I would say that's probably a definite figure, because it looked to me like it was buzzy, it was busy, it was enjoyable. One thing that definitely worked, and I like this idea. So under the grandstand in the curragh, the main part, which has come in for criticism, they had like an MC there throughout the day, Robbie Irwin, who was getting various people up on stage, and so 20 minutes before, half an hour before the Derby, Aidan O'Brien came in and spoke about all his Derby contenders to the actual crowd, rather than not just in the parade ring. He was actually in the middle of the inside part of the grandstand. And at various stages, different people came up. Even I did a little tipping thing at one stage. And I was like, God, that's so simple, but so... that makes perfect sense. Why are more tracks not doing that? So they are trying things. Afterwards, there was music playing and... people stayed. Like, I was obviously missed my deadline as usual, and I was there a good bit after the last race, and I would say I was there an hour and a half after the last race, and the place was still packed. So in fairness to the curragh, they have put in serious work into that day, and they got their rewards with a buzz and with a crowd and with an enjoyable day. I know I'm talking a lot, but to finish up on the whole, the big talking point was six handicaps, Irish Derby day, no group race apart from the Irish Derby. I still think it does need it needs a proper big race to support it. And I spoke to Eddie Lynham, who won the Rockingham. I mentioned this in my piece afterwards, and he goes, well, look, I have no group horses, so he's an impartial observer, really, or else he should be saying this is great to have six handicaps. And he said, do you know what? I think there should be more group races. I think this should be a marquee event, and we need to make it a marquee event. And his suggestion, which a lot of, you know, clever people seem to be suggesting, is putting the Irish Oaks and the Irish Derby on the same weekend, like it is in Britain, obviously, where you have the Oaks on the Friday and the Derby on the Saturday. But obviously in Ireland, it would probably be a Saturday and a Sunday. And I think that's probably the way this thing is going. Make it into a kind of a classic festival, because everything in Ireland is a festival now. You leave your house and it's a festival. So there's the Dublin Racing Festival, there's the Irish Champions Festival, there's Galway Festival, there's festivals all over the shop. So I think this will turn into a festival in time. And Whirlpool was up over 6%, I think. So obviously that's working. And it's worth, I think the quota figure was 700,000 to Irish racing. So That's a lot of money. So overall, to sum up, after talking nonsense there for the last few minutes, I would say real good buzz. I enjoyed the day personally. I think the Curra is working hard to get an enjoyable race day experience and to get people back. And for that, I commend them. But still work to do.
Okay. Now, Jonathan, I don't know about you, but I'm a bit more detached. I've never actually been to the Curra, so I think we're observing things a little bit more from afar. Aidan O'Brien, though, he was asked about criticism of the Irish Derby. He said it was absolute nonsense. I know you and I are kind of in disagreement with him, while we have a tremendous amount of respect for him, in that, you know, we are sort of journalist reporters, and it is our job to analyse how race days are performing, I guess, and how they could be better, you know, through indicators like attendance, general atmosphere, feel, betting turnover, etc. And like DJ said, the world pool is up. But what do you make of Aidan O'Brien's comments that he said it's absolute nonsense that the race is criticised and we should all go along and talk about how great it is?
Yeah, I'm not sure I entirely agree. I think that there is an element of truth in that if you are overly and unfairly negative about an event or about a situation, that it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy and it becomes a bit of a race to the bottom and you're almost pushing it off the ledge, as it were. At the same time, there are a few pundits and a few journalists who should know better retweeting that, saying, oh, you're absolutely spot on, we all need to be more positive, etc. My view is very much that criticism is fair. Our job is to be an objective observer of these things. As with Richie's column, you have to raise these issues, and I think you'd be doing the sport a greater disservice if you just went along with everything and said, isn't everything great?
Yeah.
I think it shows an investment in it to be critical, and not overly critical, don't get me wrong there, but to challenge and ask difficult questions, I think, is absolutely within our, it's not a luxury, it's the job.
You know,
that's a very big part of what we do.
Yeah.
So some of the reaction on social media made me want to throw my phone out a window. But no, I think that I don't agree with that. I think criticism within certain bounds is completely fair. It's because you want it to be better. It is a debate, it is a topic of conversation. And just my view of the whole thing generally is that DJ said it there about that world pool, the money that's going back into Irish racing. I've been lucky enough to go to events with various people and administrators and people who are running these tracks and liaising with the Hong Kong Jockey Club. They are tripping over themselves to get a slice of world pool globally. I'm talking all sorts of different countries are trying to get a piece of this because it is so vitally important from a funding perspective. I take the point that in an ideal world, if money were absolutely no object, you'd have all the group races and it would be purely about the spectator on the ground and getting people through the door. I get that. But the reality is the world pool funding is very important. So there is an element of striking a balance between the people who are coming on the day and the prestige of the event, but also you need compelling racing, you need competitive handicaps to appeal to those punters who are propping the whole thing up.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think a lot of the frustration comes from all the investment that's gone into the Curra, and people want to see their pound of flesh, I guess, for all that money that's gone into it. You know, it's a classic race course. It should be attracting good attendance figures and great racing more than anything. So I hear Richie's point that, you know, he was arguing that we all know the Irish Derby itself in isolation is something of an issue. It's not the race it once was. And of course, if it wasn't down to the O'Brien family and them supporting it, then it would be in a very different place. But yeah, the room for improvement seems to be the final verdict, although there were shoots of promise at the Curra on Sunday. We'll be back in just a moment, but next up we're going to discuss Oisin Murphy and his charges. He is due to appear in court on Thursday. Welcome back to the front page, and now we're going to discuss a huge story from last week, which was Oisin Murphy and the fact he was charged with drink driving and refusing to take a roadside test after a car crash near Lambourne in April. A female passenger was taken to hospital with serious injuries. Thames Valley Police released their statement on Thursday. Jonathan, this is huge news. We're going to see Oisin Murphy in court this week on Thursday. We'll know more then. But very troubling times for the leading rider of his generation.
No, absolutely right. And look, there are limitations to what can be said because these are charges and he's appearing in court, so you have to be a little bit careful. There have been people kind of coming down on either side and saying, you know, being fairly damning or fairly sympathetic. I think it's all kind of elementary until he has his day in court. What I would say in abstraction is it is a bad news story for the sport generally. And I would say that, you know, if we are in a situation where somebody is struggling with addiction or is having troubles of this nature, you would hope that they're getting the support that they need during that time.
Absolutely. And it's worth saying Ashim was previously banned for 14 months due to COVID and alcohol breaches. Five charges were brought against him by the BHA previously during that time. And when he was relicensed in 2023, he had a requirement to stay sober and avoid the use of illicit and social drugs. He's riding at Windsor this evening. He's been riding throughout the whole spell where this has been ongoing. DJ, what do you make of this? It's a sad and troubling case.
Of course it is. Sure, from our point of view, I would say, like, there's no point in kicking a man when he's down. You have to feel a certain amount of sympathy for him, I suppose, and as well as that, realise the magnitude of the whole incident. Like, it's scary, like, and that poor girl, like, God, by all accounts, I can only imagine what she's going through, so you have to think of her as well. So, it's not good, Maddie.
No, we will find out more on Thursday, as I say. Jonathan, I think with a story like this, it's developing as we speak, but it doesn't reflect well on the whole of the sport that this is a potential situation in one of our key figures and someone who's incredibly popular, incredibly successful, a Group 1 winner this season. It's not attracting positive attention anyway to racing from a wider perspective.
No, it's always bad when British racing appears in the front of the newspapers for a different reason, you know, in sort of a general point. I just think there's this kind of tricky balance in that Ashim Murphy is somebody who has really committed to his ambassadorial role, ostensibly. You know, when he's on course, he makes a real effort. He's aware of his media responsibilities. You know, he does those videos. If he's critiquing his own rides, he's his own worst critic at the same time. Juxtaposed to that is that he has been in the headlines for the wrong reason, and certainly in this case. So it's just, yeah, as DJ said, it's just a sad situation that he has found himself in.
It is indeed. And moving on from Ashim Murphy, we're going to talk about the loss of a legendary trainer in Barry Hills just after this break. For the final instalment of this week's Front Page, we're going to pay tribute to Barry Hills, who was lost last week, a legendary trainer who created a dynasty in racing all his own. Jonathan, slightly before you and our time when Barry was at his peak, but I've really personally enjoyed learning a lot more about him. I knew that obviously he was father to the twin jockeys who are incredibly successful, Richard and Michael, and also Charlie, who now has his own training license, who's been incredibly successful as well. But I thought it was testament to him, and it sounds like the character he was, that he was able to build such a training empire from such humble roots, if you like, basically punted his way into the training world, which is incredible. Sounded like a real mentor and a great man, and more than anything else, just a wonderful trainer. You know, his CV is awash with Group 1 success, including classics. The Derby eluded him, of course, but when I was getting into racing, I know Gennati was around, and she was a big flag bearer for him, the 1,000 Guineas winner. Very, very sad loss, Barry Hills. What do you make of what he achieved as a trainer? Pretty exceptional.
Yeah, I mean, without wishing to sound too profound, I think he is a product of a world that no longer exists, really. This idea that you could start pretty much from the absolute bottom and kind of get to the top as he did, just on his wits and on a bit of gambling and brave decisions and, you know, creating the right network of people around him. I think when you think about his legacy, for me, it's less that black and white CV. That's incredibly impressive. I mean, I think it was 10 British and Irish classics. It's a fantastic achievement. But his real achievement, I think, and it was borne out in the tributes and some of the people that were coming forward to offer tributes, his real legacy is the number of trainers, and there's a whole generation of trainers that he's sort of responsible for that looked up to him as an example of the fact that it could be done. And that's not least to mention, that's without even mentioning his family and their contribution to the sport, his direct family. You've got people like Rafe Beckett saying he was a trainer I looked up to. There's a whole network of people, Nicky Henderson, so many that he was a role model to. And for me, that's his legacy as much as the races he won and those great horses.
Yeah, I wasn't fortunate enough to meet Barry, but he sounds like an exceptional man. I've just got his CV in front of me here and scrolling up and down. It's an incredibly long and decorated one. And as well as his exploits on the flat, also trained a Cheltenham Festival winner. So it's clearly a guy you want on your corner. DJ, what are your memories of the great Barry Hills?
Nomadic Way was mine. I think I was about six, and I can still remember that Stayers Hurdle. Trapper John obviously was the big Irish hope, and he was just, if you actually, like, it would never really happen now, because I think, if I'm right in saying, Nomadic Way ran in the Ascot Gold Cup before running in the Triumph Hurdle, I think. I was young, so I have vague recollections of this, but I just remember, like, he was so consistent. But I think maybe he could have finished second maybe 9 or 10 times over hurdles as well. Like, so he was one of these horses that was always on the premise, and his big day obviously came in that Stayers Hurdle in 1992. So I just loved them colours and took a shine to that horse. At that stage, I was a young kid, but Cheltenham was just everything to me. And I remember that day in 1992. But like, he's just, you know, when you go through his CV, like, there aren't too many who have the CV that he has, like, to win an ARC. And the ARC, I think, was it 73, I think, did Ryan Gold win the ARC? Like, and then to go into the 90s, like, it's a long career of sustained success. And it's only, in fairness, like, and this is probably a terrible thing, it's only when somebody dies that you realise the magnitude of their achievements. Like, and you're going back and you're looking at a CV and you're going, oh my God, like, this is astonishing stuff. Like, and I do remember Moonax and Haft and, like, all these horses over such a long period of time. It is a remarkable career. And then when you bring in the stuff that I didn't know, I'm only reading about now, that how he actually got his leg up in the game, and you're going, whoa, this is unbelievable. This is like documentary stuff. We need to be, you know, making a movie about this. A remarkable career. I suppose Nomadic Way would be the first thing I think of when I think of Barry Hills is Nomadic Way.
Yeah, I'm sure many people will share those fond memories. DJ, one of the things I found interesting about him was he was clearly an innovator and someone who wanted to progress and bring things forward. Trained from various different training centres. Newmarket, of course, was a very powerful figure in Lambourne, where he developed Farringdon Place, which was a state-of-the-art stables. But Jonathan, I guess our sort of more direct connection to Barry would be through his sons. And Charlie is, you know, a tremendous trainer, and it's clear that he's inherited a lot of what he knows from his father. And not just that, but how to conduct yourself and how to sort of stay positive, I guess, when times aren't tough. We know training is a tough game, but it's clear he's learned a lot from the old man.
Yeah, and it's really nice that you have that kind of that line through with the training and Charlie. But obviously, his two other sons are reasonably good in the saddle as well.
Reasonably,
Richard and Michael,
yes.
You know. It's just one of those. I've always loved that about racing. It's always fascinated me, these dynasties. It seems to be a sport that attracts them more than any other, really. It is that kind of handing down of techniques and ability and means and everything like that. It's so great to see these families go right the way through. There are so many in racing, thinking, you know, Scudamores and what have you. That's just one off the top of my head. But
wait until you see James Jennings writing for the Racing Post in 2050 something.
Exactly.
That'll be the next dynasty, Johnny.
He wouldn't miss a deadline.
Oh, shots are fired there on the front.
It mustn't
page.
Be mine, so.
Oh, there we are. Barry Hills, of course, we're sending our condolences to all of his family and his loved ones. A wonderful trainer and very enjoyable to go back over some of our memories of him. That's all we've got time for on this week's Front Page. Clearly a very important week for racing. Plenty more developments in store. Make sure to stay tuned to theracingpost.com for the latest news, views and topics on the sport we all know and love. And we'll see you again in a week's time.